Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we do a big fat recap of the Alec Baldwin Comedy Central roast that I was a part of. Lots of details there. And we talked to famous coach Jim Harbaugh as well. First, betonline.ag. NFL weekly pick'em charity contest. NFL and college action all continues. We're moving ahead from here. Head to betonline.ag. Take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account. Use the promo code PODCAST1. Matchups week two. You got Vikings at Packers, KC at Oakland, Seattle, Pittsburgh, Saints against my Rams, Philly at Atlanta. Lots of good matchups. We've got $500 in rewards to give out each week to five listeners and $5,000 season long charity contest. Join the conversation on Twitter at hashtag SportsNet Challenge. Let's see. Last week, one, two, three. I won four for five. I just lost the Browns versus the Titans. I won all the rest of my Rams, Chargers, Chiefs, Seahawks. On a roll, baby. You can be on one, too. Use the promo code PODCAST1. Get a 50% sign-up bonus today. BetOnline.ag. Support for the Adam Carolla Podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Imagine how it feels to have an award-winning team by your side through every step of the mortgage process. That's exactly what you get with Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage does more to help you understand the home buying process so you can get exactly what you need. They've helped millions of Americans achieve their dream of home ownership. When you're ready to purchase your home, and the home of your dreams, they can help you as well. J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination 9 years in a row and highest in mortgage servicing 6 years in a row. When you work with them, you get more than just a loan because Rocket Mortgage is more than just a lender. Right, Dawson?
Get started online at rocketmortgage.com/Adam. For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the star of the upcoming film D-Day, Weston Cage Coppola. With Gina Grad on news, Balt Bryan on sound effects, Coach Jim Harbaugh calls in, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, after taking so many digs on Saturday night at the roast, he's had a change of heart. Words hurt, and he's tired of all your microaggressions. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on the church with the gunner, man. Did you get it on? Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. And good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
Quiet.
That's Alec Baldwin. Yeah, let's see. We're at this Aban Theater in Beverly Hills.
Wilshire and La Cienega-ish.
Yes, right in there. I don't know. Must be 1,500 seats. I don't know. What is Saban? It's got a big up. It's got an upper balcony. It kind of keeps going because they had it arranged with tables and stuff down below. But
1,900.
That's a classy place for a roast.
It's a nice old theater. Yeah. Boy, Comedy Central really took it over. I mean, semi-trucks and cables everywhere.
Oh,
it's really a big production. I kind of forgot how big a production the roasts were. De Niro was there. I was sitting next to Caitlyn Jenner and De Niro and Caroline Ray on one side. I was on the Baldwin side, sitting over there.
On the groom's side or the bride's side?
Yeah, it's the thing that's funny. I'll tell you, there's a funny dynamic that Caitlyn Jenner has, and I like
how so.
Oh, right.
Do well, tell.
Hear me out. Hear me out. I talk racing with Caitlyn Jenner all the time because she did a lot of racing back in the day. Does stuff. Son does stuff. Goes out and does this, goes out in the desert and took his, I don't know, he had a Porsche GT2, a street car, just took it to Thermal as a local racetrack, or it's a Palm Springs or something like that. The thing that's a funny dynamic about Caitlin is Caitlin wears big heels.
Mm-hmm.
And was walking around at 6'2 without the heels. So now big. Caitlyn Jenner has big hands and squeezes hard. When Caitlyn also sort of moves, when Caitlyn moves, like Caitlyn will bump you and jostle you. You know the guys that are kind of physical.
She man spreads.
Yeah. And then every chance she gets. And we always talk. We're sitting next to each other talking the whole time. You know, and so Caitlin's like, oh, yeah, I take my boys out the desert. You know, boys fun in the desert. You know, boys day out. Like, boys, like, flying against the sort of I'm going to do the voice and I'm going to turn into this creature. Like, I'm going to – a weird kind of a duality.
Yeah.
And a weird, I don't know, sort of point of pride, like, hey, I'll still kick your ass. Like I'm not, I'm a woman, but I'm all man. Like, just
hold on.
It's like what I'm saying is if someone said to me, look, Adam, you've got to pass yourself off as a woman. Like, this is a bad 80s rom-com, and you're going to get thrown out of this dorm. I would not do it like Caitlyn Jenner. I would not be squeezing the shit out of everyone's hand and banging them with my shoulder when I turned around and sort of moving around in a way.
Lumbering.
That, yeah, like lumbering around and kind of jostling under the boards.
Right.
So there, and also every chance, just always like hitting the desert, got my boys out in the desert. And it's just it always strikes me as you're doing these two things sort of simultaneously. You're becoming a woman, but you're also sort of putting this masculine feature forward as well. I don't know if it's psychological. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm the dude from the man show who races cars too. So maybe there's a little, maybe she ups the ante a little around me. Right. Maybe not so much if.
Around Kris Jenner.
Yeah. Or maybe more. I don't know. I'm trying to think of like if Caitlin was around, Reese Witherspoon. I'm picking someone diminutive.
Yeah, dainty.
Dainty. Like, would this be, or is it because I'm a 6'2 dude who races cars?
Maybe relating. I just threw up in my mouth.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's always an interesting dynamic that I'm always. I'll talk to Drew about it one of these days because I'm not sure. It's a little bit of a mixed message. It's a mixed message to become a female, but when you when you shake a guy's hand, you give it a good hard squeeze.
Not femininely.
But that's the message. She threaded the needle.
So deeply ingrained, you know what I mean, from a young age, that that's just how she is, that's hardwired at this point?
Well, not that this is...
Don't know.
This isn't the same necessarily, but there are people who've transitioned. There are men who've transitioned into women who are now lesbians. So you think that's a little strange, but that's one of the paths.
Yeah. There's too many directions now. It's a hub with a million spokes. Mm-hmm. It used to just be a Moto Mag.
Excuse me?
A Moto Mag back in the BMX days was just a magnesium rim that had like the center hub and then like just four kind of main spokes. It was like a compass, or like when they draw like northwest, north, south, east, and west. Like you had four
directions.
You go four directions. Now you go 5 million directions, and I can't keep track of all of them. But anyway, I like Caitlin, so we had a good time with that. Caitlin did something that was smart. There's little things that I don't think people think about, and this was very smart. You write all your jokes. Yeah, Caitlin's in the Willie T. rib stock. Thanks, Max Ben. That's true. You write all your jokes. You send your jokes in. You go back and forth. I went up at the comedy club. The comedy store. I did some. I went up in the belly room on Friday night before I did some. At a certain point, you've you just lock it off. You know, I don't know, 3 p.m, day of the show, it's all in.
It's done.
And it's all in the prompter. There is no more going up there with your note cards and stuff like that. It's all just in prompter. But what you don't know is that the prompter breaks everything up into a weird format. It's not the format you've written on your paper. It's a different format. Right. It is not how you wrote it all the way across the page. It'll take it, break it off, and do it into a weird thing.
It's a timing issue.
Yeah. So what happens is they go, well, come on out on Friday and, you know, try it out. You go out on Friday, had like an old script with old jokes or whatever. I was sitting, and now you have all your jokes, and you could have 3 pages of your jokes with them in order and everything else and worded exactly how you want it. But unless you've seen it in prompter, you're going to be, I don't want to say off balance, but you're not, your comfort level is not what it'll be if you don't see it in prompter. Now, Caitlin was sitting next to me and, you know, during the commercial or stop down or whatever, was looking at pictures, looking in her phone. Now, and I was kind of like, what's she doing with her phone? And I noticed some video was playing or whatever. Caitlin was smart enough. It's probably the dude in her thinking to film the prompter.
Oh, wow.
During rehearsal. Yep. Wow. So then when she wanted to run lines, she could just scroll prompter because
there's a muscle memory of looking at that.
You can scroll all the lines you want. If you're not seeing it in the prompter format, it'll jostle you a little bit. So we had Matt, who was sitting at your table. You were sitting.
Excuse me? At your table?
Not us.
That's right. My table.
That's hurtful.
I put it out to everyone, didn't I?
No, you most certainly did not.
Oh, sorry.
I thought, before the show started, I thought it was in New York. I thought it was in New York.
Oh. Oh, I told Matt, put it out to everybody.
I don't doubt you told Matt.
Matt hoarded that table. I would have stayed home from Napa.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who was it?
I would have stayed home from home.
Who was at my table? Now, your table was next to De Niro's table and Baldwin's table.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
You were like
thank you so
dead
much.
Nuts center, right?
Yeah, it was incredible. Thank you again for that.
My table, which I didn't go to, was just right in the center of everything.
It was August, his wife, Kellison, his wife, Matt DeAndrea, Kevin Hench. Me and my lovely wife.
Oh. We're
fit in there very nicely.
We're looking from
look at that POV.
The table. Yeah, we'll put these pictures up at adamcarolla.com.
Bald is right in the name.
So I was so Baldwin's great, and I had this weird thing, which was I wasn't going to be. I don't put myself out for anything. The phone rings, and I'll do something, or it doesn't ring, and I don't. I don't audition. I don't. Right. I don't go. What?
You're done pitching. You said.
I don't pitch. No, like, I don't go. Let me be in on this. Yeah. Like I'm done pitching. The thing with the roast, I did my last one like 13 years ago. They don't ask me. Right. I'm not on that list. I'm done. But as I related to you guys, that when this one was found out with Baldwin, then Mike August was like, go get in on it. You know, go tell Baldwin you want to be in on it, then he'll do it. And then I was like, but I did it. And then I found myself there, and I was like, I have a weird wiring, which is I come from such a group of fuck-up, misfit whatevers. And it's a weird wiring it that I don't really do anything that's normal. Like, I don't know how to make a tie, walking the red carpet, reading a teleprompter, like all this stuff. It all just feels weird and bizarre. Like a podcast doesn't feel weird to me. This feels like what I should be doing. And building doesn't feel weird, or driving a race car doesn't feel weird. Like, many things don't feel weird, but putting on a suit, walking the red carpet, hitting your mark, reading a prompter, it's like Corollas don't do that. Don't do that stuff. That's for other people.
Right. So this is the Kimmels of the world.
Weird. It's just, I have a weird relationship with certain things. And thus, I just go like, don't invite anyone. No, don't go. You don't want to go. Nobody go. Just don't go. It's probably not going to be that good. And they go, we want to support you. And then I always go, no.
How would you do
that? That's the last thing I want.
I don't want to look out and like see you sitting there
the
and like get distracted. Just it'll be fine. Stay home.
I'll tell you about it later.
Yeah. So I don't know, Matt, you can share some feelings. And then the other thing I was like is, all right, I just want to go early and I'm going to get a
so I can drink.
They're serving cocktails all night long. I mean, they're pouring heavy-handed for everybody all night long, but you don't want a cocktail before you do your thing.
Right.
So I'm like, I just want to go. I hope I go early and I give a cocktail.
You're like, alphabetical order?
When did you find out the order?
Well, they screwed it up. They were like backstage in the meeting. De Niro showed up into the green room. Everyone was standing there. And I was... I don't know. Did they pitch a Smigel? Was Smigel in that group? I was talking to Robert Smigel. Anyway, he was backstage. I pitched him a joke.
Oh, nothing.
Smigel went. I said, I'm not going to do it because it never gets a... I tried it twice at the Comedy Store. Again, didn't get a laugh. I like it, but nobody liked it. And he said, well, what is it? I said, Baldwin, listen, you don't want me roasting you. I'm bad luck. The first guy I roasted, Hugh Hefner, he's dead. Then second person I roasted, Pam Anderson, and her last paying gig was blowing the WikiLeaks guy. And he laughed, and he goes, I get it. And I go, I know, but no one else, I don't think anyone gets the Julian Assange visiting at the whatever estate, whatever. So I never put it in because everyone at the comedy store was confused by it.
He said, anyway, thanks for the B-.
We were hanging around backstage, and I'll give you guys tomorrow jokes that didn't make the cut, and you can be surprised by it. But at some point, I kept saying to them, or I would say, when am I going? And they go, in the middle. You're going in the middle. And then they went over it, and they... So it turns out I went like second to last.
I was going
to
say, in the middle between the first and the last person, somewhere between the first
and
the last.
Yeah, I went late. Well, I mean, Ross goes at the end and De Niro. I think that Ross goes at the end and De Niro and Baldwin. But then I was toward the end of the whole night. I was out there for like 2 hours, which is like, I kind of wanted. What you want to do is you just want to do it, have that drink, and sit down. Just sitting there the whole time.
Plus, your jokes are going to get burned. The Caitlyn Jenner jokes and the Baldwin jokes. And
well, I think they figured it out. I can't remember if I was talking to you guys about this, but it used to just be everyone do a half-hour free-for-all, no cards, nobody knew anything. Now they're vetting everything. Well, and
it's
they're
like a TED Talk.
They know if you're doing the same joke. Now, you don't know what the other comedians are doing, but they know what everyone is doing. So if you got the same joke as Sean Hayes, they're going to flag it or tell you or tell one of you's got to change it. Sorry. What? Speaking of Sean Hayes, I thought it was a weird thing. The very earliest one of the I had to remind Sean Hayes, one of the earliest jobs I ever had in show business was for like the AT&T calling card,
call
or direct
call 1-800 call ATT or something.
Yeah, and there was something that was very...
And you and him were like the two persons had the head or something?
So yes, and there was something that always stayed with me. It's always stayed with me. One of the reasons I just like doing the podcast and radio and whatever is because I have a sweaty head. And when you do these things, you can have a sweaty head. Like, well, you do... This commercial, we're stuck in this head.
1-800-COLLECT.
Yeah, 1-800-COLLECT with me and Sean Hayes. That's the commercial.
Didn't you remind him to get gas?
Me? You're the smart one.
How what?
Relax.
We're called...
All right.
Tim.
Anyway. So it's me and Sean Hayes. Now, I don't know why, but this always stuck in my head. So I'm a sweaty head guy. And so I don't even like doing stuff on camera that much, but ties and roast and lights and stuff like, oh, I'm going to be all sweaty.
Right, it's everything.
So Sean, I was trapped in this head with him all day on a soundstage. They had all the lights inside the head. They'd constructed like a big fiberglass head. Mm-hmm. They put all the lights, gaffed all the lights in it, and they never figured out a way to cool it or... circulate the air or do anything. And you'd step into it and it'd just be an oven.
Roasting.
And so it's like you could go like one pass, you know. You could do your lines and then you'd have to step out and someone have to put a fan on you and then they'd have to blot your head. And then you could go back in and do your line again and then go back out again. And I remember I was like, God, I'm so sweaty. It's so hot in my face, you know, and I kept stepping out. Mm. And that's how you feel self-conscious. Like, we got to stop. Yeah. I got to get the makeup lady in here.
Carola Schwitzing.
I said to Sean, I said, why aren't you covered with sweat? You know, and he goes, I just don't sweat.
Jesus.
Like, I have nothing. Like, it's one of those things where if you're both covered with sweat, you feel so much more
sympathetic.
Good about it, you know. It's just like, we had to keep stopping because I was sweating. I don't know, for some reason or something symbolic. All I remember from Sean Hayes is him just going, my face never sweats. And I remember just thinking, it's so weirdly symbolic that you're hosting, that you're the roast master tonight. For some reason, just a guy who never sweats. I'm worried about sweating. He's a guy who never sweats. He's hosting. I don't know why it took us a weird thing. So
he's 140 pounds. I imagine that helps.
I am telling you, the worst, like Dr. Drew never sweat. His face never sweat. He never gets the sweaty head. Like Baldwin gets a sweaty head. He'd make a person coming out there all the time. Drew will never sweat. You'll never, if you ever picture Drew, you've never even seen that guy.
Yeah, he has a matte finish.
Sorry, speaking of Matt. Matt, did you have a good time?
Oh, I had an absolute blast. I thought you crushed it, first of all. Some killer lines in there. But I thought everybody did a great job. And what was really cool about it is the opening comic came out and basically told the audience, check your wokeness at the door. We're all here to have fun. You know, don't be looking to gauge the celebrities' reactions and see what they think about the joke. So all the rules were kind of set down early on for everyone just to let loose and have a great time. And it didn't stop for 3 hours. It was amazing.
I'm happy to say I was there because Baldwin wanted me there. And when I was doing it, he was sitting closest. And he had turned himself so he was sort of facing me more than the audience, and he was laughing his ass off.
Good.
Which
that's
I'm
great.
Very happy
it's
about.
The ultimate goal.
And he came in, got the final word, and was so funny. Some of those other roasts, they highlight somebody who is supposed to end the night on a great night, and they don't necessarily deliver.
Justin Bieber's was the saddest end of a roast I've ever seen in my life.
Right. Like, you hear like canned applause and stuff. Yeah. I mean, Baldwin just crushed it. It was such a great ending.
Who do you think wrote? Did he write his own jokes, you think?
I'm not saying no because he couldn't. I'm just saying out of a time constraint thing. They have pretty good joke writers.
Quiet.
And I heard they pitched me a bunch of jokes, and I heard a lot of them coming out of the mouth of other Blake Griffin and guys like that. They're very funny. I was happy and honored. Sitting kind of closest to me was I recognize David Spade, but Larry David.
All right.
And I'm like, this guy's a comedy connoisseur. Like, you could get other people to laugh, but this guy's a comedic black belt over there. And at some point after I did my set, I was sitting there and his guy was with or something, like waved me over, and they both came over the center of the stage, this guy and Larry, and Larry's like, I'm trying to remember what jokes you did. They were so funny. There was still, he was repeating them back to me and trying to remember ones, and it was like the greatest moment of my life. It's like having a comedic hero come over there and wave you to the side of the stage and kiss your butt. So
like Carson back in the day, right? Kind of like that. Yeah, wave you over, sign of you made it.
He was,
or at least you crossed a threshold.
He was literally repeating some of my jokes and then trying to remember others and heaping praise. So it felt very good.
Who'd you mingle with? Who'd you shoot the shit with? You told De Niro you think he's dumb? you told De Niro you think he's dumb?
No.
Oh, no, come on. Missed opportunity, man.
De Niro's De Niro.
You know? You go.
He did a good job. He did a good job in the roast. He's, you know, a little, I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's not really standoffish, but he's just like, he's just kind of there. He's kind of over it.
He's an actor, you know, like from a certain school of acting. So he's kind of internalized everything. He's quiet, probably observational.
Yeah. Yeah. He talked a little about Raging Bull and stuff like that. I was explaining to him, I was saying how funny Raging Bull is, like how funny Pesci is in it and how funny their relationship, you know, when he's hitting him in the head and
harder.
Yelling. Yeah. And telling his wife, I love it when De Niro throws his wife out of the room and then Pesci sort of notices and looks at his wife and goes, what are you looking at? Go get out of here. Like, you can tell he's just kissing his ass. Yeah. I talk to Baldwin a lot, but Baldwin I talk to anyway.
Were there some people, some notables there just to observe, like in the audience, i.e. Larry David? He didn't roast, did he?
No, there was your David Spades and your Larry Davids and some comedians in the audience and some notables in the audience and Ireland, sure. Baldwin, daughter was there. Uh-huh. And
did Kim make an appearance?
No, oh, no, but good. There was some brutal roasting
up,
going
sure.
on. Yeah. So it was good. It'll be on, I guess, Saturday.
Oh, so that's Sunday. Soon. Oh, nice.
Yeah, well, I think they turn them around. See, I don't know what the turnaround was, but when you told everyone freeform it for 25 minutes and you had, Dick Gregory talking about touring historically black universities in the 60s and do 40 minutes on that, you had to edit that shit way down. Like
it'll air sometime in December.
Right. Now, everyone's stuff is locked off,
right.
Put in a computer, put in a prompter. Mm. I mean, they're probably editing as you go, that joke didn't get a great response. We'll cut that one. You know, so it's the entire process. You know, I try to tell people all the time, Sunday night, 10 o'clock on Comedy Central. I try to tell people all the time that, you know, they go, just shoot fat, just shoot fat, just shoot everything fat. Mm-hmm. Like, get all the stuff. Yeah. I go, you know, it's a lot harder to edit when you have a ton of shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? It makes the editing process a lot easier when everyone's kind of keeping it to eight or 9 minutes. All right. Let's see. Let me hit four hymns. And then Gina's got a Napa airplane story. Embarrassing, you said?
I think I can one-up Brian on his Starbucks I'm a girl story.
The discomfort of it.
Yeah. No, almost, yes.
Yes.
I'm throwing down the gauntlet.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. You're at Starbucks, and the person behind the counter was mistaken for a man or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the ambiguous name. All right. For him, 66% of men start to lose their hair by age 35, what the hell, guys? ForHims.com, one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. Hims connects you with real doctors online to treat your hair loss. Generic equivalents of name brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No gas station countertop supplements. No waiting in awkward doctor's rooms or waiting rooms or visits. Featured in GQ, Men's Health, Esquire, and Playboy as well. My listeners get a free trial month. So hang on to it if you still got it, boys. For a free trial month, you can try it out for just $5 while supplies last. See website for full details and safety information. Would cost you hundreds if you went to a pharmacy. Now just $5. Try it out. Go to forhims.com/Adam. forhims.com/Adam. /Adam. forhims.com/M. You know, the thing about the roast is it's sort of the ultimate. You know, I found out about it with a little bit of short notice. I had about 10 days. Now, it hangs over your head because if you're not writing jokes and you're not trying jokes and you're not trying to put something together, you're going, first off, everyone up there is a serial killer in terms of their comedic right. ability. Everyone's really good. You're going to stand out is bad.
Yeah.
No one wants to be that Nikki Glaser was really funny and Jeff Ross was like, how is that? He's more of a podcast guy. Or stay in your lane, you know? So there's that. But it's the ultimate sort of, it's not for bad students. I've had to kind of change my ways. But you can kick the can down the road. Like, you can go, I don't feel like trying these jokes out, or I don't want to write anymore. I don't want to sift through this or work on that or get on the phone with Lynch and blah, blah, blah. You can do all that you want, but at some point, you're going to be standing there in front of 1,900 people and
in front of you, let alone eyes on the TV.
Right. Some point, you will be there and you will pray you did your goddamn homework. And there's just that thing. It's like, it's the lazy comedian meets the bad student meets the person that just doesn't want to stand up there and not have it flow.
Yeah.
Yes. So I've had to change my ways a little.
I write new jokes for a class of 9 people every week, and I'm a little bit nervous going up there and delivering the jokes to 9 people. You had 10 days. I can only imagine 10 days to write jokes to deliver amongst world-class comedians to an audience of 2,000.
And it will air.
Yeah, and will air to millions. Let's just say millions.
Well, thanks. And this is why I tell people.
I'm saying, what are you thinking?
You know, it's scary. It is. You're putting yourself in a vulnerable position. But here's the thing. I started doing stand-up this year every week. Mm. So I'd already had my muscles weren't atrophied. And this is what I try to tell people. Look, you got to get out there and you got to prepare. And you got, because you don't know when the phone's going to ring and you're going to get in the game, you know.
You're going to the gym. The game of basketball happened to break out.
Right. I was, at least my joints were kind of lubricated enough by just being up on stage over the last year a lot. Not reading a teleprompter, not in this environment, obviously. But the muscles were being worked, you know, and that's why I kind of tell people, look, go out, throw these challenges down, get yourself into these positions, work those muscles, work that part of your brain, and then you'll be at least some, you know, you'll never be poised to pounce, but you'll be in position with 10 days notice to get onto that dais. All right, what happened to you, Gina Grant?
Well, I had a beautiful weekend in Napa, a beautiful temperature escape after still not having an air conditioner. And it was Brian. I went to the French Laundry, too. I don't know what the big deal is, but I stood in front of the French Laundry.
You went to the property?
Pointed at it and sent you a picture. I think Kaylin has a couple of pics. But it was beautiful. It was the girl, of course, the
Look
girl in white.
Look at those basic bitches.
Oh, how dare you. It was her bachelorette, and we went on the little wine tour to Jessup and Fela and Visa Tui, and it was just...
You went to Fela?
Yeah, it was great.
Fela's excellent.
Yeah, and that's...
I don't know what
it's a little off the beaten path. That's not a very popular winery.
It was really, really cool.
Fela's excellent.
That last one was me standing in the French Laundry garden, Brian.
That's pretty sweet.
And
the garden's awesome. It's like across the street, it's 100...
bucolic.
It's almost like a football field.
It's stunning. So we just... It was just soaking up that temperature and that air and that landscape. I desperately needed it. And this was lunch. It was a little small, but it was delicious.
Food,
lamb
yes.
and whatever it was, that was at Visa Tui, and it was just beautiful and amazing, and it was enough to get the plane ride out there out of my head, which was what I needed because I was on Southwest, so you choose your own seat.
Mm-hmm.
And
drunk, I'm drunk.
Mm-hmm. Pretty full flight, mm-hmm. pretty packed, a lot of people going to Northern California, going to Oakland, and I didn't care where I sat. I just like the aisle. I get a little, you know, you've seen me on planes. I get a little crazy. I need to be on the aisle. So I sit down next to a woman with a baby. I don't care she's doing her best. I don't mind crying babies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So an older woman comes and sits in between us, in between the woman with the baby and me. And she's probably a grandparent, and she's oohing and aahing and cooing over this little baby. And she keeps talking about how fat the baby is.
That's
you know?
Not her baby?
The grandma.
Grandma,
like this older woman.
Older woman.
Is
must
talking
be
to the young
grandma.
Mom. No, I'm sorry.
No,
they don't know each other.
Okay,
exactly.
Like grandma.
Goes,
okay.
Oh, what a
mm-hmm.
little chunky monkey. What mm-hmm. a little pumpkin. Oh, mm-hmm. what a fat. That is a fat baby. Fat baby. Keeps doing it. Oh, look at that fat baby boy. Oh, fat baby boy. It keeps doing it. And the mom goes, actually, it's a fat baby girl. And everyone kind of stops. I'm sitting there. I got earbuds in, but I'm not listening to anything. I just don't want to be part of this. And she goes, oh, dear. Oh, I'm so sorry. I couldn't tell because of the boys' clothes. She goes, actually, there's no such thing as a difference between boys and girls' baby
Jesus
clothes.
Christ.
And that was my flight for an hour. Mm. Silence after that. Mm. They didn't interact, and I listened to a murder podcast because it was more comfortable to me.
Is it just the color? Wait, what was the kid wearing?
And like a gray romper with little little sailboats on it.
That's boyish.
Would you guys ever correct anybody on the gender? Again, I'm so curious about the people you'll never see or interact with again. Why the settling?
Yeah.
You know, why?
Yeah. No.
Why
no.
Is it worth to you?
I was just yelling this at Drew. Like it's like I'm 55. You're 47. Mm. Our combined age is 103. And next time, it's like there is no next time. There is no next time. There's no next time. I'll never see.
Yeah.
I've been 55 years. I've never met you.
No.
There will be no next time. What is that? What? Why? Who does that?
I've never had that situation with Tessa, but with Charlie, people are like, oh, cute little dog. She's so cute, blah, 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 yeah. Oh, the only time I ever guess to it is, what's her name? Then I guess, like, well, it's Charlie, and then the game's out at that point. But otherwise,
Charlie's an I.
Let it go.
So this person could have easily made this one.
Yeah, and it was like it didn't come to fisticuffs, but oh, what a fat boy, what a fat little boy. And the mom, and the mom was outraged and wanted to
was
make
mom
sure
mom outraged over the weight or the sex.
I think it was both. I think if it was what a cute little boy, it would be different than what a fat little boy. And then it was, I'm sorry, I couldn't tell because it's wearing boys' clothes. So the whole thing was very offensive to mom.
Now, here's an interesting thought.
Triggered.
Mother ever.
If mom is a plumper, it's a little out of line.
She was just a basic, regular
regular
thin
mom. Because most kids are chubby and it's cute.
And it's the best.
It's cute that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to be fat. They're going to be big and healthy.
Yeah.
Is there anything better than a fat baby thigh? The cutest.
Little rolls.
No, the best. Yeah. No, I miss Sonny. He used to have a pumpkin head and have that weird look, and now he looks sort of normal. Which
I don't
abide by. But hour flight. Yeah, there's no reason.
I've had
Southwest flights and stuff where it's like I've said to somebody like, "Could you swap seats?" So me and Drew. So I was flying with Drew, and it's like the guy's just sitting alone. He's just like, "Nope." It was a weird, okay, we're just going to sit on this plane and have a super uncomfortable time together. One time, I haven't told this in a while, but it's like, I think a guy was like sitting in the middle or he was sitting on the end with an open seat in the middle or something. And I said, look, could we swap so I could sit with my partner? And he's like, nope. And the fattest dude ever was like the last dude on the plane, and he just waddled all the way across, and he just sat right next to this dude. And I just turned. I was like, bingo, bingo. Enjoy your flight,
you
buddy. You enjoy your flight. Like Dom DeLuise type. Woody Allen movie where he's talking about Gladwell or something like that.
Malcolm McLuhan.
Malcolm McLuhan.
And he goes,
you know nothing of my work. Like that fantasy scene. Yeah.
He's like, if only McLuhan could be right here. And he's like, as a matter of fact, I am.
Right.
He foretold the internet that day.
It was me going, this guy being a dick, being rude, me going like a pox on you. And then late entry on the plane, world's biggest man sat down. Right next to him. It was nothing more satisfying. Yeah.
Marshall McLuhan? Malcolm? I forget. Marshall? I think
it was Marshall McLuhan. Yeah.
Either way, it was like the guy was in line. He was big mouthed about how McLuhan, he was just so basic or whatever it was. And Woody Allen sides to the camera. He's like, if only, wouldn't it be great if McLuhan could be right here? And it pulls him out from off screen.
Yeah, it's great a scene. Funny scene. And he just explains, he knows nothing
of my work.
Can I give a quick PSA about suitcases? And because I subscribe to this theory, so I think this is mostly for women, but probably a lot more men than we realize. I had a very heavy suitcase. I don't know what the hell I packed. I never know what I pack. I just know I overpack and don't use 90% of it. And I have a giant suitcase that'll fit in the overhead bin, and I'm kind of wrestling with it, and I'm getting it in. And this very nice man says, "Miss, can I help you with that suitcase?" And I said, "Oh, no, thanks." And he goes, "Oh, you got it?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's a little heavy, but I have a rule that I'm not going to pack more than I can physically put in a bin." Mm-hmm. So I put it in, and he goes, "Oh, cool." And I thought, who expects to overpack and have some random person do their bidding for them? Mm. I would never pack more than I could deal with myself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot the other super satisfying I was on a Southwest flight once, and like the guy, like Dieter from Sprockets, got on.
Flew LeBorg.
And he had a space age piece of like rolling equipment, and it was made of like, brushed titanium. And it looked like a Bugatti automobile, but
it came from
luggage.
The Sharper Image catalog. Right.
Yeah, it was like $600 worth of whatever. And I'm always traveling with like the Audi duffel bag I got from the Audi booth like 9 years ago. Mike Augustin. I travel the duffel bag because I got to stuff it places. This guy gets it over his head on a Southwest flight. There's no way he can get it in the bin. And because it's made of it's made of like ballistic military grade titanium. It won't
can't
give.
Move.
It
no
can't
give.
Move. And he's like fighting it. And then he like pulls it back with his cool glasses and buckles on his shoes and stuff. And he tries to go in like at a different angle. Mm. And it's like an eighth of an inch off every single angle, but it has no, it has the structural rigidity of a NASCAR roll cage. And he can't, like, it just won't. He's just fighting it and fighting it. And then at some point, like the person, like the steward, you know, the stewardess comes up and is like, I'm sorry, but if you can't, he's like, I got it. And it's like,
it fit on the flight.
Everyone is seated. We're ready to push back. We need to take this and bring it off the plane. And he's just standing alone with his $500 luggage in a sea of 110 people. And they're all sitting in their seats waiting. And he's just sweating and fighting. Never got it in. And she had to take it. Everyone, fucking duffel bag, man. You got to be able to mash it.
Yeah.
You got to be able to mash. All right. Let's see. We got Drew's phone call. You guys tell me about this. Drew, God, he's such a horrible broadcaster. I had to do a podcast.
Your partner of 25 years.
Yeah, I had to do a podcast.
How
much do I carry that guy? God, do I carry him. He was in New York, and so I had to do the whole thing over the phone. Now, where's my phone? Well, it's not here. Because I don't bring my phone in the studio. Drew brings his phone in the studio because he's a doctor. Yeah. And you never know. But he doesn't do it. And all he does is look at stuff and it drives him nuts, right? And I just tell him, leave your phone alone. Just don't leave it in there. Well, my wife could be calling. It's like, okay. But so then
even more reason to leave
it. Yeah, get it after the whatever. Now he's in his Manhattan apartment and he's calling and he's on. And we're doing a podcast. And, you know, Drew's a little slow on the draw sometimes, but he seems very slow this day. And I suspect he's looking at his phone the whole time he's talking to me. Now, when he sits where you sit, he still kind of looks at it, but he doesn't completely check out into
it. Eye contact.
Now he's at home and he's no doubt. And I'm
unbridled.
He's on Skype. Right. He didn't need his phone. He was on Skype. So he's looking at his phone while he's Skyping with me. And I don't know enough about technology, but you can hear what happened. You guys tell me. You tell me what he did. He played it off like he got a phone call, but I realized he wouldn't get a phone call. He was just looking at stuff. Okay. Now the whole day he was super slow and out of it, and also, the way Drew works is if I ever dare take a swig off my coffee mug, he just stops. It just stops. It's just dead air. All right, let's see what it. I'm finishing up a live read. All right, here it is. With the code ADS at manscaped.com, that's 20% off plus free shipping. Manscaped.com with the code.
Speaker live, always.
It's Tuesday. Speaker live.
With the code.
Wow.
Jesus. With the code, sorry.
With the code.
Yeah.
Potential peace deal with the talent.
Sorry. I don't know what's going on with the code ADS. Code ADS at Manscaped.
All
right, so what's he doing?
It sounds like he was surfing on the computer and there was a pop up.
Yeah, pop up is my suspicion. Sometimes you go into a news site and they'll start playing a news segment, you know, to tease or something like that.
I used to have this conversation with Donnie all the time. I'd go, look, you can have your phone on you when we film, but you just put it on vibrate. Like, don't turn the sound down when we're live. You can look at it. You'll know if you get a call, but just have the sound down.
Yeah, but if he muted that, he would mute you. It sounds like it came up
on
his computer.
He was on Skype.
Right.
Oh, on his computer.
Yeah. It's likely he was on Skype on his computer.
Yeah.
And he was browsing on another window while you... you doing the read means time to check CNN.
Time to surf.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I think he did it the whole goddamn... we did five shows. He did it the entire time. Aww. Like, I could barely think. Jesus Christ.
And in the rest of the clip, you could hear him say, like, you could hear his phone get thrown, and he said he threw it to get it out of the speaker.
Threw it.
Yeah. That was his instinct.
Yeah. Good.
I love it.
Should be running scared. All right, let's see. Got a Hyundai commercial. I think Hyundai.
Hyundai like Sunday.
Hyundai.
I used to have a like Tiburon. Sunday. It's Hyundai.
Hyundai's folks, Subaru, but you just got passed.
Oh, yeah. No.
They're coming for you.
Yeah, and Volvo,
coming for your good vibes.
Look out.
Don't take my vibes.
Listen, what's a standard feature? Sorry.
Lawnmower.
Everyone's taking care of everything.
Oh.
That's right. Everyone's taking care of their neighbors.
There are a lot of ways to offer hope. Our way is by donating a portion of every Hyundai sold to Hyundai Hope on Wheels to help find a cure for childhood cancer so families can come home for good.
Wow.
Hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard on every Hyundai.
Come standard on everything or nothing. I don't know. Yeah, I think there's hope is their standard feature, and it comes on every. So a moonroof is how much more? But hope is what?
Hope is standard.
Hope is
standard. Yeah.
All right. So I want a rear window defroster.
That's going to cost you. That's going to actually cost you. It's part of our outdoor package.
Ooh. I hope I get it for free.
Doesn't work that way.
It's still going to cost you quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, it's good. The hope does come free,
but
the rear window defroster comes part of our outdoor package.
And then, okay, here's something else I hope.
Okay.
Hope is standard.
All right.
The heating and cooled seats.
Ah, that's part of our comfort package.
Yes, I hope that's. I hope that you're comfortable.
Unfortunately, that is also an upgrade fee.
Oh.
That's $2,500.
And what about the rust-proof weather protecting on the bottom side of the
car?
That's part of the weather
package. That's part of the weather package.
I hope that's a free package.
Well, that is an optional package that you can purchase.
Well, where's the hope?
The hope is all throughout the car. The hope envelops the car.
Question.
Yes, sir. The only person in the room.
Okay. Is there a space-saving hope like they have for tires? You know what I mean? Like a smaller,
that
like where would the hope be? Would it be in the glove box? Where would I keep it?
That's interesting. We should have a separate compartment for the hope, but it just kind of is all around the car, all inside the car, on top and bottom. Yeah, it's kind of everywhere.
And this is all Hyundai's.
Of course, yeah. Every model in our line.
Let's say I had a Daihatsu Charrette.
Okay,
would that come with hope?
Well, that car has been made for several decades, so I would imagine that the hope is probably not included.
So when I trade in my trade, would I get a premium because of it, hope?
If you traded in for a Hyundai, you would get the hope, sir.
But not my...
The packages, however, are initial.
But I got a Nissan Sentra as well. Is there any hope involved with that?
No hope. Not standard, as far as I know. I'm not an expert on the Sentra, sir. I work for Hyundai.
Yes, question.
Again, this is the only guy in the room besides me.
Could I use the high occupancy lane with a trunk full of hope?
Great question. I mean? We actually get that a lot.
Okay.
The California DMV does not recognize hope as an occupant in your vehicle.
But what if I had a sticker?
Well, that may be an aftermarket thing. I can't speak to that. I just work for the dealership.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So no to the diamond lane.
No to the diamond lane, yes to the hope. You can hope to work to drive in the diamond lane.
Okay, so the... Ooh.
Yes, yes, sir.
Okay, so I'm a student by nature. I raise my hand.
That's a good habit. You know, we all get into it.
Is the hope in the vehicle, as it leaves the factory, or is it one of those dealer-plied options like they used to do in the 70s with, like, rear-view mirrors and stuff, you know? Like they put it on at the dealership.
Great question. Occasionally, we'll have to do dealer swaps for vehicles. You know, someone wants a white car over here, and someone wants the other car. So that it comes straight from the factory off the line with hope. Great question.
And is there a warranty on the hope? Like, when my car runs out of hope, can I try to exchange it and drive like a dealer car until you can infuse more hope into my car?
We have the best powertrain hope warranty on the market. Well, considering we're the only car with hope. Yes, we far exceed any other warranties. Mm. Yes.
Okay.
So,
all right. So I'm looking at a Chevy Suburban.
No, I wouldn't do that if I were you.
But that's a zero hope.
No hope.
And Lexus make 430 is a...
No hope.
I got to look. I'm not calling you a liar.
I can just about guarantee their car does not call. There may be an option that you have to upgrade, but standard hope, we're the only game in town. Sir, yes.
I was looking into the Subarus, which are made with love.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Yeah.
A lot of good love's going to do you. I don't get into an accident right now.
Oh, no. You're saying the whole love thing's a little esoteric.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't make
sense. It means everything's different people.
This is a nuts and bolts kind of thing.
You can hope to have a safe drive. You can hope your kids make it to school safely.
Right.
Do you love your kids to make it? No, it doesn't make any sense.
You're right.
Taking life in your own hands, really.
Yeah. All right. again, I'm going to trade in my charade.
Yep.
But I'll not be getting extra for the possible hope that's involved with that car.
No, that is completely up to you.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to, you know, make a pitch for that or sell it aftermarket?
Raise my hand again.
Yes, sir.
Now, some guys put air in tires. Some guys put nitrogen in tires. Do you fill the ears with hope, or is that just regular air?
Sir, that is a ridiculous question.
Mm.
We supplement it with hope.
You supplement with hope. Okay. All right. I'm going to take some of these brochures. I'm going to show my wife's actually named Hope.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah.
She comes with the car.
Come with hope. All right, everybody. That's where we're living.
Yeah. Okay.
Car commercials now.
Hope.
No discussion of torque ratios or fuel. Wow.
You should talk about the narrative and the reveal, because
yeah,
the kid
by
comes
the
home.
Way, the kid in remission has a sign on his door, and I almost burst into tears.
I know.
I can't wait to go over there
it
with
works
Christy.
On you.
Look, give him the ball cap.
The good news is all cars work now, so we don't need to discuss any features of cars anymore. We're done with that. When I was coming up, it was like, hey, it's 21 city and 27 on the highway. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of highway, a lot of fuel. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only, by the way, if you want to wonder where we're at, not only was there a serious fuel issue when I was younger and mileage was a big deal. I mean, it really factored in the price of the fuel into the car.
Well, there was a fuel crisis.
There was a fuel crisis in the 70s. And that was a big deal. And then just later, gas just got expensive. Like, it was just, I drove a mini Nissan pickup truck because I didn't have the money for a full-size truck for fuel. But there were two elements. There was, fuel's expensive, and we're running out. Like, we're about done with fuel. Like, we've got another, you know, we got another few years, and then that's about it. Like, it's kind of dried up. So whenever you hear a lot of doom and gloom about whenever it starts putting everything on a clock, you know, like, we're going to be out of fossil fuels by 1995, and then we'll be done with it. I've heard...
It's a chicken little skies fly.
I have heard this clock thing my entire goddamn life. We've been on a clock. I mean, a few more years, and then we're out of fill in the blank.
Yeah.
All right, let me, I wonder, I'm assuming in all that, I'm assuming in all generations before us, here's what I think. There's two kinds of narcissism. There's one kind that says, I'm great, or I'm handsome, or I look good in my underpants. And then there's a greater narcissism where they explain doom and gloom. Mm. You have a target on your back. Mm-hmm. It's all going to be over in 11 years.
You don't know.
You aren't,
I'm enlightened, essentially.
Yeah. We're in that. Now, before, it's funny, as humans, we all act the same. We all feel the necessity to do the same, and everyone who came before us did the same thing, because it's got the same wiring that we have in the same species, same animal. In the past, they couldn't do a lot of environmental doom and gloom, because there wasn't any. Right. They didn't know what was going on. I mean, I remember it from the 70s, but I'm talking about 200 years ago. It must have all been rapture-based.
Oh,
everyone. Yeah. So here is the narcissism. This thing is going to happen on my watch. Mm-hmm. Think about how many people cycled through their life going, rapture while I'm here.
And the days are here.
This is going to happen while I'm here. Then they died. Then their kids said, rapture while I'm here. Then they died. That happened 2 million times. Yeah. It's never happened. We're in it now environmentally. Like, it's all going down now.
Yeah, the environmental
now,
reaction.
While I'm here. Mm. Yes, my grandmother was talking about this shit, and she's dead, and it never happened on her watch. My mom, who's been talking about this shit her entire life, it's not going to happen on her watch either. It's not going to happen on AOC's watch either, but it's all part of that doom and that gloom. All right, let me hit Castrol Edge. Stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Keep the metal parts from rubbing and robbing and friction in. It is three times, fool. Stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. It is the best. It is the edge. It is Castrol Edge. All right. Weston is not here yet. I did a had a coach, Jim Harbaugh, call up, talk to him about life and football and sports. Talk about a guy who's got a motor, man. Mm-hmm. Harbaugh. So we'll take a quick break, and I'll do a little 15-minute one-on-one with Coach Jim. Just a close win last week against Army, man.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. Was it double overtime? Double OT. Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll talk to him. Quick break. Be right back.
$25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for the fifth month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month's shipment includes a 9-ounce jar of TBJ Gourmet's Bacon Jam, perfect for bread, burgers, and every other food on planet Earth. A world championship of guacamole avocado slicer, plus the recipe card for last year's gold medal guac. A copy of Mistrial by Mark Garrigus. Of course, a bottle of Mangria or 33 wine. And lastly, in your shipment, you may find a golden ticket. That's right. One lucky winner will be invited to a morning of Sunday football at the coveted Corolla Car Museum. Sign up at CorollaDrinks.com for only $25 and cross your fingers because you and a guest may be watching the games with Adam and his regular football Sunday crew. So prep your mail's box and get ready for Adam's Monthly Nut. Hurry, we will sell out.
I want to thank Dos Equis for sponsoring this conversation I'm about to have with one of my favorite guys, Jim Harbaugh. Good to speak to you again, my friend.
Good to speak with you, Adam. How's your day going?
So far, so good. I just love football, guys. I know we've talked about this before, but I just feel like every good lesson I've learned in life came from playing football. It scares me that a lot of
I love your football stories.
Well, it scares me that a lot of parents are worried about their kids playing football. They should be worried about their kids not having intestinal fortitude and all the other things you get from playing football.
Yeah, there's a bunch. Grit, toughness, hustle. There is no question that you don't have to be the most talented guy to be one of the best guys on the team or in the sport. I mean, I would completely agree with that. We have a guy on our team, Jordan Glasgow, who he could be arguably, you could say he's the best player on the team. He walked onto our team as a true freshman, and now he's in his fifth year. He's been on scholarship for, this is his third year. I mean, he recognized the what kind of football player he was and could be once he got here. And Jordan Glasgow made a play in this last game. We had a game, I don't know if you saw it. We played Army.
Yeah.
And Jordan Glasgow made a play on the 1-yard line that was a tackle. I mean, complete hustle, grit, toughness type of play. Came from, I mean, he wasn't the closest guy to the play by any means, but he got there and made the tackle at the one. And in fact, he wasn't even in front of the ball carrier. He had to launch his body to get his body in front of the ball carrier, shoulder pads. I mean, one of those tackles that crosses the T, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
As the ball carrier is going vertical, he's got to come. He's the top part of the T that crosses and keeps the ball carrier out of the end zone. The next play, that was a first down play. The next play was a false start by the Army squad, and then shortly after that was an interception by our corner that you could say, you know, that tackle saved the day. You know, so yeah, you don't have to be the most talented guy to be one of the best players in football.
Well, you have to have a motor. And I guess as a coach, you have to assess who has the motor and who doesn't have the motor. And I guess it becomes pretty obvious pretty quickly. And then can you give people a motor?
I think you can continually give players winning mental keys like urgency and toughness and embracing preparation, embracing competition, combine those with improving skills and increasing execution and learning game to game, practice to practice, what you can learn and get better at from that will give you the tools to, you know, be a better player and have your team be more successful. Those things can be daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly.
I think you're pretty good at motivating. I don't know. Is it easier? It's probably easier to motivate at the college level than the pro level, or I mean, feel like, I don't know, the die is cast at the pro level, or they wouldn't be there if they weren't motivated. You tell
That's
me.
That's a true statement. Those pro players are, yeah, they were the most motivated. They were, you know, the guys those winning keys that I just pointed out. I mean, they were the ones that practiced them the most and improved the most and got where they are by being motivated and having a lot of grit and a lot of hustle and talent.
Do you, you know, back when you played and then back when I played, I never got to the level you got to. Obviously, you played in the pros, but there wasn't a lot about the sort of psychological part of it. You know, there was more just X's and O's. Get hyped up, you know, get out there, smash mouth, blah, blah, blah. Now there's a lot of like sports psychologists and a lot of people are, you know, meditating and there's a psychological component dynamic. Do you rely on any of that with your coaching? Do you have techniques? Do you bring people into the locker room? Do you recommend that there's 20 minutes of silence before they head out or meditation or anything of that nature?
I think, you know, there's a lot of frontiers that have been improved from, you know, when I played 20 years ago or, you know, when other people played 30 or 40 years ago. I mean, there's no question that the players they're bigger. There's no question that they're faster. There's no question that they're smarter. And there's a lot of things that have contributed to that. I mean, every year there's gains in weight training, strength and conditioning. Nutrition has been a big inflection point over the last 5-10 years, and I think sports psychology, that mental edge, is also something that is that everybody's feeling more of need to tap into, and that there is a real edge there. And we all you see it in society too. I mean, there's a growing awareness of that mental edge that sports psychology or just having therapy, having somebody to talk to is a beneficial thing. That there's tools there. There's tools there to be learned, and there's tools there to be had that give you an opportunity to improve your professional and personal relationships.
And do you use those? Do you have a sports psychologist, a chaplain, supplements? Like, what is like a pregame meal? Tell us some of that stuff.
Yeah, we do. We have a nutritionist, Abigail O'Connor, who is been like night and day. I mean, her input, her value to the team, her knowledge, her expertise on, you know, what to eat and you know, how to eat, and for anybody that's trying to put on lean muscle mass, that's a good thing in football, to be stronger and to be leaner. I always felt fat's the enemy of speed. So and she has a great way of doing it, too. I think the real experts are really good at with athletes, of getting them to eat right, but also eat what they like and make it things that they want to eat. So that's, and it's also the individualized attention. It's not just one thing fits all for when it comes to the diet for all of us human beings. Well, position, you could go through football and talk about that, but there's the common goals of, you know, everything you put in your body, everything you eat. I mean, that affects your mental outlook, your daily physical output, your energy, et cetera.
Your podcast, Tuesday's Podcast One Sports, and Apple Podcasts as well, Tack Each Day. You're doing that with your dad, right?
We are, yeah. Yeah, and as you know, you've been on it. You were one of our top guests. I mean, we really enjoyed you on our show. And I think it, like, I don't know all the downloads or the hits or what they call it, but I think it was one of our best shows. Top five, for sure.
I'm happy to talk about football, and I love talking to football guys, and I just love talking about the impact that football made on me, who was sort of rudderless and didn't have a good relationship with my family and so on, and then like a strong male sort of in my life. Just what a impact that would make, or that can make, in a young boy's life. And you know, we're so busy talking about concussions and injuries and aggression that we sort of missing out on all. It'd be like talking about the automobile and just talking about crashes and drunk drivers, you know, and not talking about, well, I got an SUV and I put my family in it and we went to the Grand Canyon last weekend and had a great goddamn time. Like, someone goes, yeah, but what about the drunk drivers? And I'd go, oh, there is that. There is that element. There's always that element in everything. But what about the part where you see America safely? Like, there's always this possibility. But what about the part where there's the good stuff? I think we're skipping past all the good stuff. We go right for the danger in everything. And then we do it with fossil fuel. You know, we go right to the danger. We don't go the part where, what about the part that you got air conditioning in your house in the middle of the summer, or you're driving your SUV to the Grand Canyon? Like, what about that?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things you're saying there really resonate with me. No question about it. And the first is, I mean, I did have a dad like that. I did have a dad that was, you know, a real rudder. I mean, my dad was the kind of dad that, you know, he took you to ball games, he played catch with you, and he believed in you. And, you know, sports was, I mean, all the good things of competition and structure and discipline were valued very, very highly. So, like, on a daily basis growing up, that's what I had. And that was really why I wanted to start the podcast. I wanted that. I wanted my dad on tape, you know, telling these life lessons, telling these stories, you know, his experience. Because I really, obviously, I wanted it for my own kids. I wanted my own kids to be able to, when they were older, to be able to listen to what their grandfather had to say and what his perspective on everything was. Sports, politics, life, relationships, personal and professional, because to me they're just all so good, and that was I think that's what we've done. Our podcast has gone on for 2 years, not to make a promotion for our podcast or anything, but it's, you know, we really kind of thought we'll have friends on, we'll have people that we respect, people that we admire and we want to talk to, like yourself, on our podcast. And when we run out of friends, we'll stop doing the podcast. We didn't think, you know, but it's gone on for 2 years. We thought maybe it'd go on for a couple months. And then the other thing that resonated with what you just talked about was, it's just kind of like America itself, you know, like the, hey, we're going to do it, man. We're going to do it. We don't know how we're going to do it. We don't know when we're going to do it. We don't know all the final. We're going to put a man on the moon.
Right.
We're just going to do it. And by God, we're going to do it by this time. Again, not knowing when or how, but not all the. Oh, what if this? What if that? What if this happens? Where you don't even start to do it. But yeah, my opinion that I'm in agreement with you there. I think we've lost some of that. You know, damn the torpedoes. It's gonna get down, and it's gonna get down by us, and we'll figure it out. We'll find a way before all the negativity and the naysayers come up with and go way over the legal limits of what ifs.
Well, you know, to me, it's a kind of a balance that a family has. The man traditionally would say, "Let him play football." The wife would worry if he's injured playing football or rugby or riding a motorcycle or whatever, fill in the blank. And a lot of the dads have started thinking like the wives. I mean, I live in LA, so I got a lot of dads that think like their wives do. And so now, instead of one parent saying, "Don't worry about him, let him play," and the other parent going, "I'm okay, I worry, but I'm going to go watch him play." Now you have two parents who are thinking the same and both worried, and the kid never gets signed up.
Yeah, I guess I know some people like that too. I guess fortunately, I had a mom that was like, would tell me to stick my face in on the tackle and
really,
you know, accuse me of just, you know, of not you got to pop up, you know, you got to pop right up after you get hit. You can't let the other team think that they hurt you or got you down. You gotta pop right back up, and you gotta run on and off the field. And I could say my mom, Jackie Harbaugh's, was I had two, in your analogy, two dads that way that would tell me what the right way to play football.
I guess that's where you got your crazy grit, right? I don't know how much it is nature, how much is nurture. I'm sure there's both. For you,
I definitely think there's no doubt a lot of it came from my mom's side. Her father, Joseph Petey, came from Sicily when he was 4 years old. Not to bore you with the whole entire family history, but came over and was growing up in Cleveland, had to drop out of junior high. I don't know exactly what grade it was, but it was about 12 years old, where he had to quit going to school and had to get a job to support the family and put food on the table. And then he, self-made guy, in that he finally did go to school to be a mechanic and worked at a trade school, and then became a teacher at the trade school, and then was working at a filling station and being a mechanic, and then saved up enough money to buy his own filling station, and then got the filling station, but then it burned down and he lost everything. And then he had to go back to working in the filling station. And me and my brother, John, he'd have us working at the filling station too, you know, changing oil and pumping gas whenever we'd go visit him. And then saved up enough money again to buy a piece of property in what became Solon, a pretty nice part of Cleveland now, and opened up a nursery. That was his dream, to have a nursery and sell trees, and did that the rest of his life. And so, yeah, really, I don't have to look very far for examples of toughness and grit and hustle farther than Joseph Petey or Bill Harbaugh, who was a brakeman on a train and worked his way up to being an engineer right before he retired. So, yeah. Blue collar in the family.
It's always, it strikes me, like when I heard that Joe Frazier had died, he died, I guess, maybe this year or so. And it said, "son of a sharecropper." And I thought to myself, you know, in the future, it's going to be son of a blogger or son of a guy who came up with apps, or somebody drove for Grubhub. Like, there's no brakemen on trains or sharecroppers or ran a filling station. It's all, these are all these crazy. Oh, he, Frazier died in 2011. Someone just put that on my screen. God, I thought he died just like last year. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I think the beautiful thing we all have, though, is, I mean, there's very few of us that don't have this, is, you know, they can go back in their family tree and find somebody. Might have been their parents, might have been their grandparents, probably at least going to be their great-grandparents, where they can say, you know, that's where it was. That was the person that worked multiple jobs or one job or more, doing a job that they didn't want to do or didn't like to do, but they did it to put a roof over the family's head and keep them fed and make sure that their kids got an education to where they had a chance to do a job that we love. And we all have that in common. And just look back through the family and then have the humility to know that, you know, yeah, you didn't do this all by yourself. You're not standing on third base right now because you hit a triple. Somebody in the family did that blue collar, hard working, you know, dirty job that they didn't want to do, and have the humility to recognize that and appreciate that, and don't blow the sacrifice that they made to get you where you're at right now. I know I don't.
Sadly, in the Corolla family, I think that person is me.
You're the man.
I'm the man. Jim, I'd love to do your show again with your dad, Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, and you can check that out, Tuesdays, Podcast One, Apple Podcasts as well. So whenever you'd like, just hit me up. I'd be more than happy to share some old stories with you.
Appreciate it, pal.
Thanks.
We'll look forward to doing that very soon.
Thanks, Jim Harbaugh. Appreciate it. That call was brought to you by Dos Equis, official beer sponsor of the college football playoff. Hey, college football fans, need to brush up on your knowledge? Enroll in Dos Equis College Football College. You'll learn from brilliant football minds like Jay Cutler, Martellus Bennett, Katie Nolan, John Bacon, and more. Not only will you win every football argument this season, you could enter to win a chance to win tickets to the 2020 College Football Playoff National Championship. Be the first in your family to earn a football watching certificate from a beer school. Enroll in Dos Equis College Football College at dosequis.com/edu. Dos Equis, keep it interesante. Right, Dawson?
Dos Equis beer brands. Enjoy Dos Equis responsibly. Imported by Cervezas Mexicanas, White Plains, New York. Copyright 2019. Dos Equis beer brands. No purchase necessary. US 50 DC 21 plus only. Enter by 12/2019. Full rules available on dosequis.com/edu.
Quick break. Be right back.